in Washington, D.C. The persecution of Christians in the Middle East goes to the next level. Now ISIS attempts to annihilate Christian communities under their control.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
My hope is in Yeshua. My hope is that soon and very soon we're going to see the King.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow, and this week we've been giving you a sneak preview of our upcoming documentary about religious persecution, specifically the persecution of Christians. My dad was able to sit down with the vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White, and Chris Mitchell from CBN News, who is the bureau chief for CBN News in the Middle East, and he's based in Jerusalem. They're both going to talk about, and very openly, the persecution of Christians that's ongoing right now, especially by groups like the Islamic State.
Canon White, let me start with something that we've talked a lot over the years on a lot of issues, but I want to get to something.
And we're still here.
And we're still here. Yeah. And you're still here, which is miraculous, especially with what's been going on where you've been ministering in Iraq. Let's go back a step. How did you end up as an anesthesiologist, trained as an anesthesiologist, how did you end up the vicar of Baghdad? How did you end up in Baghdad?
Well, I was a gas man. I used to put people to sleep with drugs. Now I can put them to sleep with sermons.
Yeah.
So it started, I suppose, when I was in the grounds of St. Thomas's Hospital in London one day by the River Thames. And my desire in life had been to go to St. Thomas's and study there. And I just stood by the Thames and said, "Thank you, God, for giving me what I've always wanted, to come to the best hospital in the world and study. Thank you for making me a gas man." And then I thought, I better ask God what next. So, what next, Lord? Very dangerous thing to say. And he said, "I want you to go into the church, and the Church of England, the Anglican Church." I said, "But Lord, they're not even all saved." He said, "I want you to go into the Anglican Church." So I fought it. Do you know how long I fought it?
I was going to ask you that question. How long?
Half an hour.
Okay, that's not so bad.
Half an hour, which is a very short time. Most people fight it a lot longer than that. So after I lost that battle, I applied to go off to Cambridge and do my theology. I went to Cambridge to the pastor factory or the vicar factory. You know, where you walk in normally and you walk out like that. So I went there, and I was there a few years. I did my Christian theology in 2 years. Look, Christian theology was quite boring. So I changed. I did Judaism and rabbinics. And I did my doctorate work on the role of Israel in Christian theology. So I not only stayed in Cambridge, I went off to Israel and went to Yeshiva, an ultra-Orthodox rabbinic place of learning. You know, the guys with the big black coats and the furry hats. So I became a bit of a Hasid.
Yeah. So there you are. The doctor becomes ordained, I guess, within the Anglican Church in England, ends up studying at an Orthodox Jewish Hasidim seminary, and then you end up in Baghdad.
Folks, when we come back, more of this important conversation with Canon Andrew White. Now, this is a great time you can support the American Center for Law and Justice because we have a matching challenge. To be part of that matching challenge, which means anything you donate is matched, so it's effectively doubled. This is a great time to financially contribute to the ACLJ if you can. You can make the donation by phone, by calling our toll-free number. It's 877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org. We'll be right back.
Thank you. In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now, your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. The topic, the persecution of Christians. Thousands of you speak out when we need you to on petitions and join committees, whether it's about cases here in the United States or international issues of persecution. And also, I have to thank all of you who support us financially. If you're able to make a financial donation, this is a great time to do it because we have a matching challenge. Anything you donate to the ACLJ by phone or online is doubled. So your donation has doubled the impact. It's a great time if you're thinking about making a financial contribution to the ACLJ, or you have in the past, to do so if you're able to. You call our toll-free number now and make the donation by phone at 877-989-2255 or go to aclj.org. Now more of my dad's interview with Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad.
Talk to me about Baghdad. We've discussed this a little bit before over the years, your ministry there. You felt this calling to go. You're reconciled.
When I was at Coventry, I felt I should go in the days of Saddam.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get in. And the last thing I did was to call my staff together and say, let's pray about it. And the next day, the invitation came from Tariq Aziz, Saddam's deputy.
Right.
I used to go and see Tariq Aziz in a palace. Now I go and see him in prison.
Yep. Right. When you went to Iraq, what was the state of the church?
When I started at my church in Baghdad, there was nothing, no chairs, just the odd mouse.
Right.
The only living thing in the church were pigeons. Plastic chairs we brought in. We started our service there. I can never forget the first time we worshipped there was just myself and a few of my colleagues with me. A few of my colleagues who incidentally all came from Virginia Beach. Mm. So they were with me for our first service there. But after the war, things changed. First service, my congregation, I looked around and they were nearly all spooks. They were all the CIA and the intelligence.
So it was American and British. It was
our
people there.
All the intel.
Yeah.
All the intel were there. And they became my really good friends.
Yep.
So we worshipped there. And then the church grew. First week, 100 Iraqis. It grew when all the spooks stopped coming.
So when the CIA and
so when the Americans and the Brits stopped because it was getting too dangerous, we opened it to the Iraqis. First week 100, second week 200, third week 300, fourth week 400. Mm. I thought, this is quite a good growth rate.
Yeah, wow.
So we grew to about 6,500.
I want everybody to understand that. It went from zero to 6,500 in a period of how long?
In a period of a year and a bit.
Mm. That is some growth.
And we started a clinic. It was quite good with my medical background. So we started a doctor's, a dentist, a pharmacy, a laboratory, everything for healthcare. We started there. And we thought it wouldn't need to run for long because healthcare would improve. I was wrong.
Yeah. Did you serve, by the way, when you were serving the healthcare needs of the community, was it just within the Iraqi Christian community or was it opened up to people that needed care?
95% of our patients are Muslims. Mm. 5% were our own Christian people.
So this was the church really reaching out to the community at large.
It served everybody. People used to say to me, well, how do you preach to the non-Christians? How do you reach Muslims? I said, I don't. I just love them. We just serve them. And all of them have dreams of Yeshua.
Yeah.
We call Jesus Yeshua.
Right.
In Israel, we call him Yeshua.
Right.
But in Aramaic, he is Yeshua.
Right.
So I would say that over 70% of our people have had dreams of Jesus. Mm. And a very large number of our people are actually Muslims. Muslim women come to worship every week.
The ministry there is going on in the context of a war. What was that like for the Christian members of your church while the armed conflict was going on in Iraq?
Well, you see, while it was going on, it's still going on.
Right.
And
well, it's going on differently now. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's talk about
what eventually happened was a lot of our people started moving back to Nineveh.
Mm.
Nineveh is a traditional homeland of the Christian community. And Nineveh is Christian because once upon a time an evangelist came there, miserable evangelist. He came by submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And 700 years later, another miserable evangelist came.
Yeah.
Here in the West, you call him Doubting Thomas.
Right.
We call him Martoma.
Right.
And he saw all these people believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he said to them, did you know your Messiah had come? His name is Yeshua. He came in Israel. So he told the people, and they all believed. To this day, until ISIS, the terrorists, turned up a few months ago, Nineveh was all Christian.
So what was daily life like? Let's pre-ISIS. Even during the conflict, of course, there's real conflict now. It's a whole different ballgame, actually, and we'll talk about ISIS in a moment. But what was the day like for the persecuted Christians in Iraq?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Even though everything was awful, we were so happy.
Mm.
And the media came once, they were making a film about me, and they said to one of our young people, how is it that all of you are so happy when we are surrounded by bombers and your people are being killed and everything is terrible? And she said, when you've lost everything, Jesus is all you've got left. And so even though we have lost everything, we haven't lost our Lord. So we're happy.
Let's talk about during the conflict, the first phase of the conflict. We're still in it. That's obviously about to increase significantly in the next few months. But let's talk about where we were. We have a lot of mutual friends and a lot of friends of mine that with the Department of Justice were serving in Iraq as well on the legal issues and rebuilding the government. So I got to get reports on how you were doing from them. We of course talked and met in Israel a number of times. But let's talk about the ministry aspect of You've always had a heart for reconciliation. That's been a driving force of who you are. How does that play out, so to speak, in the context of the Middle East? Because you've got, you and I worked on Gilead Shalit's case. I mean, we could talk about so many. You've worked on people that have been kidnapped, ransomed. Tell me how that Ministry of Reconciliation works in the portion of the world, the Middle East, which is right now and has been for 2,000 years or longer, one of the key conflict points in the world. How do you do a Ministry of Reconciliation to factions that are often warring with each other?
A Ministry of Reconciliation in the Ministry in the Middle East is simply about love. You love, love, and love. When you have enemies, you bring them together. When you have opposition, the best thing you can do is that invite them to eat with you. When we meet, we eat. And I invited ISIS to come and eat with me. And they said, if we come, we kill you. So they didn't come.
I want to talk about ISIS in a moment, but I want to talk about your meet and eat idea, because I you probably are not aware of this. You were consulting with us on a situation a few years back where the Greek Orthodox Church in, remember that one, had elected a new patriarch. And there was, because of an Ottoman-era decree, you had all of these different checkoffs you had to have. You had to have the Jordanians agree, the Palestinian authorities, and the Israelis, and as soon as we'd get one government to agree, the next government would not. We were representing the Greek Orthodox there, but we've done a lot of work with the Israeli government as well. And I remember you and I went to lunch, and I said, what is the key to success on this? How do I get these people at the table to work this out? And you said, get them to eat. I don't know if you even remember that, but what happened that night, we were at the King David Hotel in the famous Ben-Gurion room where the Declaration of Independence was signed, and I had the representatives, the lawyers from the Greek Orthodox Patriarch, the elected patriarch, Israeli government officials, Jordanian officials, and they would not eat. But I remembered what you said about the eating, so I starved them, basically. So at 11 o'clock at night, I said, I am ordering food. If you don't want to eat it, don't eat it, but I'm ordering food. So we ordered the appropriate food for the table, and of course, they all ate. We met, got it mostly worked out. I went to the house on Shabbat of Ehud Olmert, who was then the Prime Minister of Israel, worked the rest of it out, and they signed off.
Remember, right now we have a matching challenge. Anything you donate to the American Center for Law and Justice effectively doubled. You can donate online at aclj.org or by the phone. That's 877-989-2255. Ultimately, this is how we do the work we do here in the United States and around the world. Go to aclj.org and be a part of our matching challenge. If you're able to now, it's a great time to donate, or call toll-free number 877-989-2255.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow in Washington, D.C. To continue the work that we do, we require your support, your activism, call and add your name to petitions, but we also need your financial support if you're able to support us. To make a financial contribution, this is a great time because the matching challenge, anything you donate is effectively doubled for the ACLJ. So a $10 donation becomes $20. You could figure it out from there. You can make the donation online now at aclj.org and be part of our matching challenge or call our toll-free number. Lines are open now. It's 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255.
Will you talk about the understanding that when you've got reconciliation, the cultural context of understanding the culture, the anthropology of the situation, the sociology of the
You've
situation.
You've got to be contextualized. I never forget the words of Longfellow, the American poet. He said, "Who is my enemy? It is a person whose story I have not heard." Recently, I brought together the Israeli religious leaders, the chief rabbis, and the Iraqi religious leaders, the Ayatollahs. One of the rabbis said, "I've come here for 3 days. I've been here, and I've got three words to say. Fear is cancelled." The Ayatollah said, "I came here hating Israel, hating you Jews, and then I've seen you. I've eaten with you. I've heard your story. And now I love you." So eating together is key.
On the reconciliation issue, you've dealt with hostage situations. We went to a friend of yours who was a member of the Knesset when Gilad Shalit, the Israeli young boy at the time, 19 years old, was kidnapped by Hamas. And we were first detailed over there, you and I, to find out if he was alive. And you got on the phone. I will never forget this one either. In fact, I keep the note of it in my passport. We went to, I'm trying to think who the member of the Knesset was. Was it Malkior?
Malkior.
And you got on the phone an Ayatollah, an imam within Hamas, to make sure he was alive. And we reconfirmed that he was. But you've done these kind of, this is another form of reconciliation, obviously. But let's talk about, you've worked on over 160 hostage situations. Obviously, it's an important part of your ministry.
I've only got back alive 43.
Right. Well, let's talk about how the process starts. I mean, is it a call into the office? How does this happen? I mean, or do you?
How it happens is, first of all, you hear the story. You know the story. You have to ascertain who it is who's actually got them. And when you know most of the bad guys, like I do, you have a good idea. So you ascertain who it is that they have got. And then you try and find out what they want. If it's political, it's more complex. If it's money, financial gain they want, it's a lot easier and hopeful. I never forget, I adopted lots of Iraqi children. One of them's here with me today. And they were only little. And my boy, Dawood, he was about 12 at the time. And I was looking for two Italian girls who had been kidnapped in Iraq. So we tried to find out who had them. I never forget because they took me when we got too close to the guys who had them. They threw me in a dark room. And they didn't take my mobile phone. So I put my phone on to create a bit of light. And all around the floor, there were fingers and toes that had been chopped off of people. Eventually, we found out who had them. And we did a deal. They wanted $40 million for each person. you always have to try and bring the price down. When they ask for money, you know that it's hopeful. Mm-hmm. So we started off at 40 million each, and I got it down to 20 million each. And so we loaded up the car with money, which came from a country which never pays for hostages, like right. all the countries never do.
Right.
But they give us lots of money anyway.
Right.
So we drove it to them. We arranged to get the girls back at the same time as we handed the money over. So we did it and got them.
So that was a successful conclusion?
Yeah.
Not all of them are?
No, most aren't. That was a quick one. And when it's money, it's a lot easier.
So as the church in Baghdad was ministering and you were doing the outreach and there was, I know you had incoming and you had military situations and people died during the conflict, then ISIS comes on the scene. Mm-hmm. And I want to draw a distinction because a lot of people are not picking up on this. I am starting to use the word jihadist army rather than terrorists, because when we think of terrorists, we think of Al-Qaeda, hiding in caves, individual cell groups. We don't think of a standing army controlling resources, money, territory, states, basically. They're not. We don't recognize them as states, but they operate like states. It's very different than the Al-Qaeda model.
And they're controlling many of the American military facilities which were left for the Iraqi army.
Right.
ISIS have now got them in their control.
When ISIS got into power in various portions of Iraq and, of course, into Syria, yeah. How did that impact your ministry? I mean, I know ultimately how it did, but I want to get people there to understand the process. So ISIS comes on the scene last summer, basically. They'd been around about a year before then, broke off from Al-Qaeda in Iraq. AQI thought they were too violent. El-Baghdadi declares himself the caliph. When did you start seeing them as a threat?
Well, we knew always that they were a threat. One of the things which leads people towards terrorism is when they have lost something. And there the Sunni minority had lost a lot under al-Maliki. They had lost things because of the de-Baathification. They had lost control of their businesses. They had lost money. But ultimately, they had lost power. And that loss was what drove them to evil terrorist activity. And what they wanted to do was to show that we still have power. We can blow you up. We can destroy you. And those who are not with us are against us.
And those that are not with us and those that are against us does not just include Jews and Christians. They've been equal opportunity killers, in a sense, because they go after everyone.
That's very interesting, calling them equal opportunity.
Yeah, they don't discriminate.
The biggest targets of ISIS at the moment are not Christian, they are not Shia, they are Sunni.
That do not agree with their version of Sunni Islam.
Their own people who do not follow them, who do not support their terrorist activity, they will kill them. So they are killing them in Al-Anbar, what used to be the key Sunni area.
When we come back, more about persecution, the work that we are doing around the world, how you can help directly, and of course the activism that you can take, what we need to do. We'll be talking about it all when we come back. I encourage you, be part of our matching challenge. Anything you donate to the ACLJ is effectively doubled. Call now, 877-989-2255, or go to aclj.org and make that donation online.
Now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
J. Secular Live. This is Jordan Secular. My dad sat down and had a discussion with Canon Andrew White, known as the Vicar of Baghdad. He was in the United States, and he's a good friend of ours, but was having a discussion about what it's like for the persecuted church right now falling under the threat from the Islamic State. This is his church. These are the people he knows who are facing this persecution now. Let's take a listen.
You've been ministering in Iraq for years. You had to leave. You've got a lot of people that have left. Let's talk about what the catalyst of having to leave, what it meant to you personally, and what was the events that got it to that point.
Well, I always said to my people, I will never leave you. Don't you leave me. And eventually, the threats against me, us, became so great.
Where were those threats coming from?
They were coming from people connected with the bad guys, which
ISIS.
Were ISIS.
Yeah.
And they were not in Baghdad. We were in the heart of Baghdad. And even though I confess that recently I have been back in Baghdad, but partly it was because I needed my treatment
right.
for my MS,
right.
which we had only devised in our own clinic in Baghdad. Mm. So I had to go.
Right.
And the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, said to me, he said, Andrew, you're more use alive than dead, so you can't be there. And I thought about it, and I thought what I could do alive and what I could not do if I wasn't alive. And basically, my people would have no hope. They would have no food. They'd have no work. They'd have no future.
So you go to a situation where I know you've got a lot of displacement now going into Jordan. Jordan, before we get to the displacement and what you're doing now with these young kids and education, I want to talk about ISIS because you were there. You know, I've looked at it legally. I've looked at it politically. I've written about it. We've studied it. Our view is they have to be crushed. There's no negotiations with them. This is not where you can have any kind of dialogue. This is not even the Iranians. This is a whole different element of evil. You've been there. You've seen it firsthand. What do you do with them?
I've tried.
And you're a guy that does reconciliation. I mean, that's your ministry.
I've tried. It can't work.
Why?
Why? Because they feel they have lost so much, and they're going to make the others lose as much as they've lost.
Yet they're attracting educated people. They're attracting people that had businesses. They're attracting young people that had college degrees from England, from the United States, from Canada. It's an interesting sociological dynamic. They're attracting, they treat women horribly, but yet they're attracting women. There's a case right now where three young girls from Britain have gone through Turkey to get to Iraq and Syria to join up with ISIS and to go through that. And these were modern Muslim younger women.
But stupid.
Well, stupid, and they may not come out alive.
And they want to
what
once
is it?
Again demonstrate the power of Islam. Mm. And they're not prepared to see that it hasn't got power. And they're not prepared to see that the power is being diminished by the West.
Has ISIS reached a point militarily that people are saying this, the Christian population of Iraq is basically gone? Is that an overstatement?
No, it's not.
Nineveh?
I feel quite tearful when you say that.
Yeah.
Because it is really difficult and really true. I'm looking after my people now in Jordan and in Kurdistan in the north, and they have fled from their historic homeland. And they have nothing left. But we will give them hope. We will give them hope because we will show them the love of Christ. We will show them that our Lord will never leave them.
Folks, when we come back, more of this important conversation with Canon Andrew White. Now, this is a great time, folks, to support the ACLJ through our matching challenge. You can make a donation online at aclj.org or by phone, 877-989-2255. We'll be right back.
In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now, your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support. The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow in Washington, D.C. To continue the work that we do, we require your support, your activism, call, add your name to petitions, but we also need your financial support if you're able to support us. To make a financial contribution, this is a great time because the matching challenge, anything you donate is effectively doubled for the ACLJ. So a $10 donation becomes $20. You could figure it out from there. You can make the donation online now at aclj.org and be part of our matching challenge or call our toll-free number. Lines are open now. It's 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255.
One of the children turned round to me a few weeks ago, and we had taken them food and we had paid their rent, and they were about to be ousted from their home, and we had saved those things for them. And before they had been so disheartened and in tears, their father, their husband, had been killed by ISIS. And we had given them everything. And one of the children said to me, Yeshua sent you to us, didn't he? Yeshua sent you to us. I said, he did, because he loves you. And then just 3 or 4 weeks ago, the little boy who had lost everything, before he used to just say, all I want is my daddy. All I want is my daddy back. And he looked at me and he said, Abuna, will you be my daddy now? And I said, of course I'll be your daddy now.
So how do you, who have such a heart for reconciliation, how do you reconcile the nature of the fact that the Christian community in Iraq is being eviscerated or being compelled to leave with your hope for ultimate reconciliation even within Iraq? I mean, how do you bridge that spiritually?
Well, the fact is that ultimately reconciliation is spiritual. Ultimately, you're talking about our people being reconciled to God forever. Ultimately, we are seeing that you can't fight these evil forces from the sky. They need to be attacked on the ground. And if we're not prepared to do that, we are not prepared to save our people.
So when you look at the threat of ISIS right now, through the lens of a pastor's heart, someone who believes in reconciliation, if you were controlling the world armies, what would you have done right now? What would you do in that region of the world militarily? I know you're not a military guy, but you've seen it.
I would have the only solution is troops on the ground, fighting from the sky, fighting in a way which might seem safe will not work.
How big of a threat is ISIS today? As we're sitting in this beautiful church, how big is that threat in the Middle East of ISIS?
The threat of ISIS in the Arab Middle East is huge. Lebanon, Syria,
Libya,
even Jordan.
Yes.
The threat is there in good countries. The threat is not there against Israel.
From ISIS. They'll rely on Hamas for that.
Because IDF will deal with it.
Yeah.
They can't beat the IDF. If they want to learn really how to fight war, they need to see the IDF, and they will know.
So what happens if ISIS is left unchecked? What if the world leadership just says, we'll try to contain them, which is, seems to be very difficult, but we'll just, they've got those territories, contain them to those territories.
Well, the world leadership, if it's intelligent, and a lot of it is not, will realize that they can't contain them by what they are doing at the moment. They've got to take a radically different approach. It's the only way forward. And the fact is, I might be about peace and reconciliation, but sometimes you have to take a very forceful attitude.
Overwhelming force?
Overwhelming force. You have to show that you have more power than they have. At the moment, they have got more power.
Mm. We just talked about overwhelming force necessary, but your ministry has had a refocus with basically a relocation ministry to get your people out of Iraq into Jordan. Tell us what the project is there and exactly what's happening.
Well, our work isn't only in Jordan.
I know that.
We're doing a lot in Kurdistan, a lot of the people are fleeing north.
Okay.
And so...
So let's talk about that. So you got people fleeing north to Kurdistan.
Yes.
And then west over to Jordan.
And a lot have gone to Turkey as well. But I can't do Turkey as well as Jordan and...
Which brings up... Let me ask you about that. Because Turkey is something that we've been concerned about. You say you can't do Turkey as well. Why is that?
Because it's just too much for one person.
There's some concern that the foreign troops that are joining ISIS are coming through Turkey. And Turkey's not really stopped that flow. Do you get any of that sense, or is it just manpower and the ability to operate? Turkey's also been very difficult on the Christian community, especially the last 10 years.
It has historically.
Yep.
You know, when you look at the history of the Armenians and the people of Abu Tor and the Assyrian community. Yep. So a lot of our Christians from Iraq who have gone to Turkey have found it very difficult.
Yeah.
So, in a way, Jordan is easier to cope with. The Jordanians as a people are very good people. And so trying to meet the needs of our people in Jordan is a huge job, but a job that we know.
So was this a relocation job, Andrew? Were you actually physically moving the people to Kurdistan and Jordan and then trying to... How do you do education, healthcare? I mean, is this basically moving operations?
Yes.
How's the
our work in Iraq is continuing.
Right.
Our work in Baghdad, our clinic, our school, everything is fairly basically operating there. As regards Jordan, we are having to provide all the needs. There was no education for any of the Iraqi refugees. And so we have started a school last week. We have 200 pupils in a school which is in the Catholic Church compound, and they are being provided everything: food, education, health care, a way forward.
How's the Jordanian government been as far as receiving these students?
Well, the Jordanians are not providing anything for the refugees.
Other than letting them come in?
Even that is very difficult.
I was going to ask you that, yeah.
They can only get in if they pay for their visas to enter the country and then they stay there. But generally, the Jordanian government is always so caring and so good. It's a very good regime. I have a very good relationship with the Jordanian leaders.
How much danger is Jordan in from ISIS?
To be honest with you, I don't know.
Because the sense is that
they could be in a considerable amount of danger.
Yeah.
But we do not know. What we do know is there are lots of ISIS people in Jordan. Mm. Even some of the children who we have brought into the school, their families have said that ISIS people have been to them and said, we're going to get you.
Mm. In Jordan?
Yes.
So let's talk about what gives you hope. You've got a ministry that's of significant proportions in the Middle East, the most dangerous neighborhood in the world. You've got a ministry in Iraq, Jordan, Kurdistan, and other places. You've got a Christian community that's being displaced. You've got a Christian community that's being killed. The Coptic Christians just lost 21, were beheaded. The brutality is in ways we've never been able to imagine. You're a man of much faith and much hope. What gives you hope?
My hope is based on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. That is it. My hope is eschatological. My hope is in Yeshua. My hope is that soon and very soon we're going to see the King.
Remember, right now we have a matching challenge. Anything you donate to the American Center for Law and Justice effectively doubled. You can donate online at aclj.org or by the phone. That's 877-989-2255. Ultimately, this is how we do the work we do here in the United States and around the world. Go to aclj.org and be a part of our matching challenge. If you're able to now, it's a great time to donate or call toll-free number 877-989-2255.
The brutality of ISIS is unspeakable. The strategy of ISIS, the Islamic State, is clear. Beheadings, crucifixions, mass executions, and a wave of anti-Christian abuse that's been called, quote, the worst religious persecution since the Holocaust. In a new book, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team examine the rise of ISIS and the very real and present danger it poses to the world, including right here in the United States. It's called Rise of ISIS, a must-read as America faces new and dangerous threats. Help us sound the alarm. We must get the nation's attention, the government's attention. Help us spread the word. Buy the book, read it, and tell your friends. When you buy the book, you'll also receive a powerful new song, Where I Stand by the Jay Sekulow Band. Order Rise of ISIS online at riseofisis.com. Also available in bookstores everywhere. In a dangerous world where there's growing chaos and conflict, the American Center for Law and Justice is there for you. Our commitment is clear. We're engaging the most critical issues of the day, protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Whether it's working to protect Americans from the dangers of radical Islam, to challenging an out-of-control IRS that unlawfully targets conservative Americans, to standing up for Israel, our most important ally, we could not do this work without your support. And now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ Matching Challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. The topic, the persecution of Christians. Thousands of you speak out when we need you to on petitions and join committees, whether it's about cases here in the United States or international issues of persecution. And also, I have to thank all of you who support us financially. If you're able to make a financial donation, this is a great time to do it because we have a matching challenge. Anything you donate to the ACLJ by phone or online is doubled. So your donation has doubled the impact. It's a great time if you're thinking about making a financial contribution to the ACLJ, or you have in the past, to do so if you're able to. You call our toll-free number now and make the donation by phone at 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Or make the donation online. Be part of our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Let's take a listen to my dad's interview with the CBN News Middle East Bureau Chief based in Jerusalem, Chris Mitchell.
You've been in the field, Chris. Give us your take right now on the status for Christians in Syria and Iraq. You've been there. What's it like?
Well, right now it's awful for them. I mean, they were given four choices, Jay. They were given, they could either leave the homes they had been in for maybe generations or years. Then they were given the choice they could stay and they could pay the jizya tax, the Islamic tax for infidels, which was usually something they couldn't afford. Then they could convert, you know, by saying the Shahada, the Islamic creed, in front of two witnesses, or they could die by the sword. So this is the four choices that Christians were given. So it's right now, most of them, I mean, tens of thousands of them have fled ISIS and now are living in refugee camps. They're living in churches or schools in Erbil and in different areas.
You dedicated the portion of the book, or at least talked about Canon right. Andrew White. Mm-hmm. We had Canon White. He's in this documentary. He's been a dear friend of ours. We supported his work. Right. He's had to move from Iraq to Jordan mm-hmm. because of the threats on his life, and he's basically relocated a lot of these young kids to be educated in Jordan. Mm-hmm. What is the day-to-day situation like for Christians right now that are dealing with this unbelievable amount of terror? Jihadist armies is what it really is. What's it like for them?
Well, they're living in fear. I mean, just a couple of days ago, maybe 200 Christians were abducted. Yeah. Some of the men were taken
220 is the number today.
Abducted to an undisclosed location for the men. Who knows what their fate's going to be? The women perhaps sold into sex slavery. So they're living under the shadow of terror that we haven't seen in generations or centuries.
Do you think this is worse than Al-Qaeda?
Oh, yes, very much so. I think it's morphed into something or metastasized into something we haven't seen in a long, long time, this kind of barbarism that the world is witnessing right now.
When you look at, you've covered you've been in the conflicts in when it's with Hamas, mm-hmm. when you look at ISIS, we drew a parallel that a lot of the goals were the same, that's the destruction of Israel. Of course, ISIS focused more on the establishment of the caliphate. You put this in the book. In your book, you talk about, you know, the establishment of the caliphate. How significant of an event, both politically mm-hmm. and theologically, is this for the jihadist world?
It's a turning point, I think, in history. The last caliphate was in 1924, was abolished by then-President Ataturk in Turkey, and I think this has been the dream ever since that was abolished by Muslims around the world, that one day the caliphate would be reestablished, which is basically this Islamic empire ruled under Islamic Sharia law. This is something they had dreamed about, and now their dream has come true. And I think it's called ripples throughout the Islamic world, where whether it's in Libya or the Sinai Peninsula, as far away as the Philippines, it's sort of fueled the imagination of many Muslims and now are pledging allegiance to ISIS.
What about this concern that we're seeing? And I think it's a sociological concern as much as anything else, where you've got people from the West, Great Britain, France, the United States. We had three arrested yesterday. That's right. But you've had British citizens. There are more Muslims serving in ISIS's army than serve Her Majesty's forces yeah. in Great Britain. What's with this attraction of young people from around the world right. to this right. barbarism?
Well, it's a spiritual phenomenon, it seems, fueled by the internet, by social media. And I think there's two things going on, Jay, right now. One thing you mentioned, these Westerners, whether it's in Great Britain, America, or Europe, attracted to this kind of ideology and want to either make their way there or maybe commit lone wolf attacks in London or wherever, maybe even the Mall of America, like like some have been encouraged to do. The other thing I think that's going on, Jay, within ISIS itself, there's maybe 8 to 12 million people, and they're indoctrinating a new generation of young jihadis, 8, 10, 12-year-old, that are pledging their allegiance to al-Baghdadi, to the caliph, and to the caliphate. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to be dealing with this for years to come.
Well, I said we could be engaged in the 1,000-year war here. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has that kind of feel. Yeah. It's intergenerational. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that the United States could lead a real military coalition and crush ISIS, which is, I think, the only way you can deal with them.
Right.
You can't contain them. They have to be crushed. We've got the military capacity to do it. Mm-hmm. The question, of course, politically, is do we have the will? And apparently, with the authorization for use of military force the president put forward, we don't. You're holding in your hand something I want to get to here. This is a Bible.
That's right, New Testament.
Where did this come from?
Well, when we ISIS took over Mosul and in which is ancient Nineveh, you know, thousands of Christians they fled, and we interviewed a number of them, and one of them was this man who gave me this New Testament. His name was Fadi, and he said that he had actually been snitched on by his neighbors, who told ISIS he was a Christian. They searched his house and they found two New Testaments. This one, which is camouflage, given to him by a U.S. service member. The other one was a New Testament, Psalms and Proverbs, that had an American flag on the inside. Mm. So they accused Fadi of being either a missionary or a spy. And miraculously, he escaped. And as we did the interview with him, and we're doing the interview now here with showing our faces, we had to do his interview with just showing his profile so he wasn't going to be identified, because he's on an ISIS hit list. And he said he just broke down during the interview. He sobbed. He felt like his life was over. He has an 8-year-old son. He has a teenage daughter. And now he doesn't know what's going to happen to them. Will they be educated? And during the interview, and he said, Jesus, save me, and also forgive ISIS. And he was just weeping as he said that. So after the interview, he gave me this. And at the time, I thought I shouldn't accept it. It's such a personal and special memento. And yet I thought I shouldn't refuse it. And so he gave me this. And I keep it as a reminder of the tens of thousands of Christians right now that have suffered through ISIS and throughout the Middle East. And that's something you're doing, Jay, you know, through your different programs, your radio show, raising awareness about the persecuted brothers and sisters in the Middle East. And that's why I wrote Destination Jerusalem, in large part, to help inform the West, the United States, Europe, others around the world that need to know who our suffering brothers and sisters are. And the second thing I had, Jay, here was a piece of candy. And after we interviewed Fadi, we went over to a Catholic churchyard. Dozens of families there. It was in the middle of the summer, maybe 100 degrees or more. And most people had lost everything. And after our interviews, one lady came up to me, and she gave me a piece of candy. And the piece of candy was maybe the last thing she could do to show some sign of hospitality. And so I just keep both of these as a reminder of what our brothers and sisters are going through right now.
We have a lot of resources up at ACLJ.org on the persecution issue. We're continually updating that. We're speaking out for the persecuted. Some of the work has to be behind the scenes because families are in too much jeopardy. So there are situations we can talk about, situations we can't talk about, victories that we know about, that we're able to tell you about, and victories that we have to keep a little quieter because people's lives are still at risk. A lot of these countries, you may have a victory, but it's still a very dangerous place to be a Christian. We want to, again, ask you if you're able to support the ACLJ financially. We don't do this all the time on the broadcast. It's a matching challenge right now, so effectively your donation has doubled the impact to us at ACLJ. A $10 donation becomes $20, $20 donation becomes $40. You can make the donation online at ACLJ.org or by phone at 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255, or go to ACLJ.org. Be a part of our matching challenge. We'll talk to you next time.
My heart is crying. Deep beneath the voice is lying. I can't stand to see this evil.
Now your support can really make a tremendous difference. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ matching challenge. If you make a gift now, it will be doubled. $25 becomes $50. A $100 gift becomes $200. Please stand with the ACLJ right now and call 1-877-989-2255. Or you can go online at aclj.org. Thank you for your support.